Good morning, and welcome to another Tuesday Community Conversations. First one of August, and first one for Julie and I in a couple of weeks. This is your host, Phil Huff. My co-host, Julie Kalaman, and I had both a couple weeks summer hiatus for house guests and local and far-reaching trips, and I want to hear about all the great fish you caught, Julie. I'm sure you went fishing.
Well, Phil, you're right. Once again, you're always right, Phil. But yes, we did do some fishing. I had a nice week of fishing in West Yellowstone with friends who are also members of KRFY. So it was a nice time. I got to see my brother, and we did have some great fishing. And then I had company from Denver, a cousin that I had not seen in many, many years. And we didn't go fishing, but we had a nice float down the Kootenai River. It was the most relaxing day I can remember in many, many, many weeks. So it's been a good couple of weeks, Phil.
It's certainly been hot enough to enjoy being on the water. We didn't, Deb and I, go fishing, but we did go hiking around the Seven Devils Loop, which is in an area southwest of Riggins, some high alpine lakes and lake basins and peaks, and it was just stunning. I know there are people fishing there. I'll tell you the secret, the secret spots later. And then we had a more localized trip into the heart of the Scotchmans to some of the hidden lakes that took some staff into so they could see for the first time. And fabulous trips. And now it's August and it's back to work.
That's right. Work in all ways, including what we call work here at KRFY, but it's not really work because we love it so much.
We do.
And with that, yes, we do. And with that, I'll introduce our topic for today and our guests. And this morning, we're going to be talking about a very hot summer that we're having and how that's impacting some of our local animals and birds, our raptors. And because of that, we've been able to contact two folks that have been with us before, and it's a little bit of a different year this year with all the heat, and would like to hear about what's happening with wildlife rescue and rehab here in North Idaho. Our two guests are, first, American Heritage Wildlife Foundation, and the executive director there is Kathleen St. Clair McGee. Hello, Kathleen.
Good morning.
So nice to have you here. Kathleen has a maybe not the best connection. She's going to do her best to speak up. We're aware that she might be a little quiet, but she's doing her best. And our second guest today is from Birds of Prey Northwest. And this gal's name is, she's the executive director, and you are Janie Veltkamp. Hello, Janie.
Hello.
Hello. So good to have you both here. What I guess we'd like to start with is to ask you to tell us both a bit about yourselves, your backgrounds briefly, and how you got interested in wildlife rehab, and then how you came to be up here in the northern part of Idaho doing the work you do. Let's start with you, Kathleen.
Basically, moved up to the area, had been a zookeeper, moved up to the area with the interest of relocating, working at zoo, realized there was not any facility for wild animal care, proceeded to start American Heritage Wildlife Foundation 20 years ago, and have been providing care for approximately 270 of the 280 species of Idaho. So we have all the state and federal permits to provide care for pretty much everything, and it's fabulous to have Janie there with her expertise for the raptors to assist as well.
Kathy, yeah, and Phil.
We've had you on before, and it's always interesting to hear some of the stories you have about specific animals that are in your care, and I'm sure we'll get to that. But for our listeners who might not have a good understanding of the range of species that you have at your facility, tell us a little bit more about that diversity and range of animals.
Well, there are some years, and Janie will attest to this, there are some years that it is just off the charts with the number of species. So there are some years when I have, three, four dozen different animals at a time, and not just, different individuals. It's, I've got 18 different types of bird species at one time, and five different mammal species at one time, and maybe a turtle and a frog at the same time as well. So it's just this wide range of knowledge that we need to possess and have the capacity to provide care for. And that's where we rely 100% on the community.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like you would need about three different kinds of veterinarians to help with all those species.
It's there are days when you wish, I absolutely wish I could step into a clone machine and be five of me.
Yeah, I can imagine. Well, how is it? I'm just going to sidestep for a minute and ask you how it is this year. Is it a crazy year? I think it probably is.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, very much so, yes.
And
Yes.
we're going to get into just how crazy the year is, and probably every summer brings its own unique stress, but this summer seems especially so. But Janie, let's hear a little bit from you about the organization that you're here representing, the Birds of Prey.
Birds of Prey Northwest was founded 30 years ago by myself. It has a twofold mission statement. Of course, we do rehabilitate injured wild birds of prey, eagles, hawks, owls, falcons, and osprey. But one of our leading missions is education of the public. And we hold several teaching birds of prey, eagles, hawks, owls, falcons, on special permits and travel with them to educate the public with living birds of prey. It's an exciting way to learn.
Yeah, and Janie, how did you get involved in this area of rehab? What, tell us a little bit about how you came to be working with these amazing raptors.
Well, I have a four-year degree in nursing, and then I was on my way to medical school, and after studying biology and chemistry for 10 years, I decided to take a summer off. And there I volunteered on a peregrine falcon reintroduction project, where they took these endangered raptors and released them off of skyscrapers. Well, they handed me one of these fast-flying falcons, and I had an epiphany as it spinned its head around and looked at me. I realized we could help restore these birds to their pinnacle, or we could wipe them off the face of the earth with our careless habits. So sorry, Mom, I'm not a doctor today, but I do use my medical skills on all my patients, which have 8,000 feathers and don't talk back.
I think it would be great to hear a little more about the facility, where you're located, and how do you structure a facility for rehabilitating birds that gives them enough space and yet they don't fly off?
We're located on 15 acres north of St. Mary's on the southern edge of Lake Coeur d'Alene. And many of our patients here are in regulation-sized aviaries. The federal government, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, dictates to us how large our facilities must be depending on the species. For instance, bald eagles are quite large, as golden eagles are. They have to be in a minimum 50-foot aviary with 10-foot width and 10-foot height, so they have ample room for flying and exercising their wings.
Yeah, so you need a lot of space, and of course you got it down there. So interesting. Let's just move on to the next little bit of conversation. And, you know, I wanted to talk generally about wildlife rescue and rehab. And it is all about helping individual animals that are in emergency situations. And we know that is very important at the time, but it's also a symptom of a really much larger problem in the region and even in the world. And that's that there's, you know, that there's a of course, interaction between humans and wildlife, and this is often where the problems arise. Let's talk about that for a minute. Kathleen, do you want to go for it? Start with that.
Well, 90% of our patients come in because of direct human interaction. That's 90% of our patients. And so people, oh, so what? It's just a little this, a little that. It's everywhere. There's robins everywhere. There's squirrels everywhere. So what if my bird catches it or my dog grabs it? And in all reality, those 90% of those patients are there because of our actions. So we should feel responsible to fix them and to restore them. Everything from window collisions to, like I said, invasive predators, habitat alteration, pesticide use. It's, you know, we should be, take a part. We should be a part of nature, not apart from nature. So, that's the crux of the matter.
If there were a couple of three messages, key messages you could relay to our listeners so that they know what to do or not to do to help avoid this kind of situation. And you've touched on a couple problems, but go a little bit further with a couple key bits of advice.
I would say, and this is going to be a hot topic, but a primary thing would be keep your cats inside, particularly during the morning and particularly during the evening. Those are key times for all those songbirds to be out and about. keep your cats in around those times, and that's going to make sure that they're going to stay safe. If you make sure your dog is fenced and is not free roaming, that's going to make sure that it's not going to run after all of those small mammals that are now toddling behind mom trying to learn their way in an ever-shrinking habitat. So those are two key things. If you're going to trim your trees, do it in a month that ends in R. Don't do it in the middle of spring. Do not trim your trees in the middle of summer because birds are nesting, squirrels are nesting. So those are some major things. Please do not use pesticides. Find alternative ways to get done what you need to get done, because pesticide use, insecticide use, it all just trickles down, and we are going to feel the effects of that. Not just, oh, it's so sad that bird species isn't here anymore. So just pay attention to your actions, really. Be a part of nature, not apart from, because no one is apart from. We all feel the effects.
So true. And, you know, this could be a topic for many, many more morning shows, but just the management of one's own landscape around their homes. And if they're on acreage, you know, we all have different ways of looking at our landscapes, but some are much more wildlife friendly. Can we talk about that for just a moment?
Okay. With myself or Janie, or would Janie like to chime in?
Sure, Janie, would you like to talk about that? Because it does make a difference in how we manage our own homes, right? Our own home landscapes.
I'd like to back up, if I could, and talk about the injuries to birds of prey, in particular in their aerial environment. Some things that are certainly preventable, and the leading cause of death of eagles in our country are illegal shooting and our use of lead bullets, which leads to lead poisoning. Our careless discardment of fishing line can entangle osprey and eagles. And as Kathleen said, pesticides trickle up to the top food chain predators, these apex predators. And electrocution is a problem. Imagine how much we've altered the vertical environment in the last 100 plus years with our trains, planes, automobiles, and now wind turbines. So in addition to habitat loss and other factors that endanger the lives of birds of prey, there are many human influences which could alter this.
I think the common link here, because clearly the threats to an eagle are different than a songbird. A house cat's less likely to have the impact, but the things, Janie, you've mentioned are. But the key link here, I think, is what we're talking about is the area of impact is not the wildland urban interface. We hear so much and talk so much about fire, but the wildlife urban interface. It's really where our urban, suburban, and rural lifestyles border up against the wildlands, and the things we can do in that zone to take particular care, pay attention to, making sure our impacts are minimal. And again, as we asked Kathleen, and you've suggested a couple of things there, are there other recommendations you'd have for us individually, collectively, as to how to manage that zone?
Well, I mean, that's a multi-loaded topic, because the mentality of most is, I own this house, I own this land, I'm allowed to do with it what I want, and I want this wild native neighbor to get out of my space. So I'm going to kill it, shoot it, whatever the case may be. So again, it's just take a step back, try and be empathetic instead of apathetic. If you really want that animal to move on, then we do have some tips and pointers on our webpage, which is ahwf.org. There are some tips and pointers on humane eviction to move that little one along, make it move along. If you don't have to have a golf course in your backyard, please don't. Just try and find ways to be a good neighbor to them if you want them to be a good neighbor to you. So it's just, again, it's put yourself as one part of a whole.
You're saying think about coexisting rather than eliminating animals that maybe you wouldn't be used to seeing, but ones that you could maybe get along with if you were just a little bit more, as you said, sympathetic.
Yeah, correct.
Janie, any recommendations, further recommendations that you might have?
Certain species of birds of prey certainly collide often with windows, so decals and wind chimes in front of them to deter that glass sky reflection is helpful. As I said earlier, fishing line carelessly discarded in cross environment is a real hazard for osprey and as in the bald eagle, those fish-eating species. And I would also add to Kathleen's tips to identify the species in your area. Be familiar. If you're moving here from another space in the country, learn what species live here. And many times these species, particularly birds of prey, can interface with our urban lifestyles. And some need more space. But being aware is certainly the first step. And even though we're heavily permitted to care for these critters across the board, they don't belong to us rehabilitators. They belong to all of us, and we're all responsible for their well-being.
Yeah, that's right. And by the time they're in rehab, we've sort of made a mistake at that point. We want to keep them healthy and out of your facilities. Let's talk about this year. It's been dry, and generally every summertime is the most busy time for both of your organizations in terms of rescue and rehab. But talk to us about what this year has been like and how it's been different from other years. Kathleen, you want to go ahead?
Well, case in point, last year, June, our number of phone calls was 75, which was a good 25% more than we normally would have previous years. This year, 179. That's a 240% jump of phone calls in just 1 month. Our phone calls for the year so far are exponentially over where we normally would bring them. We're close to 500 phone calls this year, and the year's basically only half over. So, and in 1 day, I had 5 nests of baby songbirds that were brought in because they were just leaping out from the heat. And I know, Janie, you've experienced the same thing with your raptor chicks. The heat just wiped them out. We're getting mammals in that are extremely dehydrated. The 100 degree temperature range that we're experiencing is not normal. It is not, there's no biological being that can tolerate that. And so rehabbers, we're on the front lines seeing it.
I think it would also be interesting to hear a little bit about not just how the heat has impacted the stress on animal populations. So you might be or are seeing an increase, but how has it compounded the care that you provide?
A greater reliance on more resources. So you need a greater financial ability to buy the extra supplies to provide the hydration that's needed. You need more hands there to provide that close critical care. If you have 5 patients that came in all at the same time and they all need to be provided fluids, plus they all need to be observed closely for their symptoms, and you're only one person and you only have $5 in the bank, you're gonna go through your fluids that afternoon and now what? So it's just a heavier reliance on time and supplies and financial needs.
Yeah, Janie, how is this unusual year impacting your organization?
Well, I can echo, of course, the Kathleen's experience with heat-driven departures from the nest, particularly with eagles, Cooper's hawks, harriers, red-tailed hawks. All of these birds, particularly those birds in nests without shade and having dark feathers, simply bailed from their nest before they were able to fly to escape the heat. And the lucky ones were found by humans and brought to our facility. We went from caring for 40 birds of prey to caring for 120 within a few weeks. We've been able to manage. We've got plentiful stores of food, ample volunteers, and an unusual result of the heat and the increased admissions to our facility has been remarkably an increase in support and donations. People, for the first time, really understand what a rehabilitation center does. We've been in the media a lot describing these heat-related injuries. And the public now better understands now and better is able to support these kinds of nonprofit organizations. So an unusual benefit, increased support and increased awareness.
Let's take an opportunity right here, since the subject's coming up and there's a need both for financial support as well as volunteers. Why don't each of you tell listeners how they can specifically step up? What's the email address, snail mail address, phone number, how best can they contact you to find out how to help?
Well, American Heritage Wildlife Foundation has a presence all over social media as well as on the web. So our webpage is just the organization, ahwf.org, American Heritage Wildlife Foundation.org. So that would be where you find us on the web. On that webpage is a listing of all the ways you can volunteer. It doesn't necessarily have to be hands-on care of the animals, but that is the greatest need because, unfortunately, because of the pandemic, we are down in our volunteerism. We are down at least 60% in our number of volunteers. So we are being asked by the community to do more for more with less hands on board. So it's really imperative that we do get hands on deck helping us with these wild animal patients. Transport is one area that you can help out in. Organizing events. Our events have basically gone down to zero. We have 100% decline in the number of events that we are able to put on because we just don't have the volunteers. So that's one more way that volunteers can get involved with us. Phone number to connect. If you find a wild animal, want to volunteer, want to donate, want to contribute your talents, 208-266-1488. That's 208-266-1488. Email, if you want to drop us a line, ahwf@sandpoint.net.
ahwf@sandpoint.net. Very good. And Janie, how can folks help with the Raptor program?
Well, we have an award-winning children book authored about a bald eagle we rescued, Beauty and the Beak. It's an award-winning STEM teaching book. That's one way. School programs can be scheduled. That's our main income stream, is taking our trained live birds of prey into the classroom. We give tours by appointment of our facility here down by St. Mary's, Idaho. By appointment, you can call and come take a tour and view the birds of prey here. We do Zoom meeting lessons for students still confined to homeschooling. And we offer internships for folks that want to train and learn more about birds of prey. Our website is birdsofpreynorthwest.org. And our phone number is 208-245-1367. You can say to contact us. We are an all-volunteer rescue organization and a nonprofit.
And we'll probably repeat all of this information or some of the most pertinent at the end, but let's come back to the animals in distress. How do the animals find you? How do the people find you that have animals? Do they mostly come in from individuals or local authorities that the individuals have contacted? Tell us a little bit about how it is that you take in the animals in your care. And maybe we'll start with you, Kathleen.
The animals are always found by tenderhearted people because when we have a phone call, someone calls us, lets us know they found something. Many times that animal is in an area where literally hundreds of other people had seen that animal. And that one superhero was the one that took a few moments to reach out and find out how to help. So that superhero gets to be patted on the back for actually taking the time to stop and care. They then contact us because that animal is acting peculiarly, that perhaps that animal has eyes closed or is vocalizing a lot nonstop. If it's fluffed up, maybe the feathers or the fur don't seem perfect, or a limb is dragging. Or the animal is located in an odd location, someplace that it shouldn't be. So that person has decided to be part of nature and is aware of what they should be seeing, and what they're seeing is not what they should be seeing. So then they do search and they locate a rehabilitator near them, which can be found. Recently organized is the Idaho Rehabilitators Association. So if you go to airforwildlife.org, you will see a listing of the handful of Idaho rehabilitators that might be closer to you. But Idaho only has a handful, so, and we are all community supported. So the superhero gets to decide to be put on their cape and be some more superhero and actually make that drive to these centers that are willing to donate all of their time to help this wild animal.
Thank you. I'm imagining, and Janie, you can probably chime in here with the details, that it may be harder with birds of prey to tell when they're in distress. The signs that might seem obvious to us that are used to seeing the deer in the backyard and then suddenly they're acting funny, we don't always see the bald eagle or golden eagle every day. So what are the signs there, and are there any that we should be aware of that we might not know to look for?
Sure. I often advise people that unless a bird of prey is on the ground and eating something, feeding, if it's on the ground, there's probably a problem. They could have suffered from secondary poisoning, been struck by a car, hit a glass window. And so people often find us through a web search or through Idaho Fish and Game, where we then often coach the citizen through the rescue. Then the bird comes to us for x-ray and treatment. And then we have a network of some 30 plus volunteers throughout the panhandle here that we can call in for help if people aren't comfortable getting a bird captive, so that we can help it. But usually if you're on the ground, there's a problem. If you've got wings, you should be up high.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Kathleen, with your work and so many different species of animals, of course you've mentioned that they maybe aren't acting right, but there are some cases when people maybe mistakenly see a normal baby animal or adult animal and want to rescue it. And we don't want to do that, do we?
No, that is absolutely correct. And that's why on the American Heritage Wildlife site webpage, which is ahwf.org, go to that webpage and you will see a checklist. And that's very quick and simple questions to answer to decide, hey, do I need to be a superhero for this animal? Or is this just the wonder of nature that I get to experience right now? Because yeah, there are, with all the species we deal with, there's a lot of different components you have to ask yourself. And that's what that checklist is all about. And that's when you do call our interns and our volunteers at the center at 208-266-1488, you'll have them ask you several questions so that we can determine, is this normal? Is this not normal? Yes, you need to pick up this animal. Yes, you need to take this animal to our facility very, very soon. Oh, nope, this animal, just put the animal in a box and check it in a half an hour. And so, yeah, there's just going to be a lot of questions involved to determine what's the right course of action.
Yeah, so I was going to ask you to walk us through the steps, but it sounds like maybe one of the first steps is calling you and or going to your website and learning about what to look for before we act. I'm sure there are times when we have to act quickly, but would you say that in more cases it's an observation process?
Yes, absolutely right. I mean, that's primary. Julie, you're absolutely right. That's perfect. Stand back and watch and wait before you do anything. You know, wait a minute, do I need to put on my cape and my superhero? Do I need to go to the phone booth and put on my super cape yet? Or can I kind of just wait a minute and see what's happening? And so ideally, you'll just kind of watch and observe to determine if it is in need of you rescuing that animal. Because there are many, many factors involved, depending upon the species, depending upon the time of year, depending upon, there's just the weather, everything. There's so many factors that play into this. And that's where, when folks call up, oh, I did a Google search on what to do. Please don't do that. Just like your doctor advises, please don't Google search your symptoms. Please don't Google search what to do with a wild animal. Just go to Air for Wildlife, and that will give you a list of the rehabilitators that are near you, so you can talk to the people that have years of experience and know the right questions to ask.
It sounds like, for the would-be heroes out there, because there's so much that's situationally dependent, those who think they might be in a position to be able to rescue an animal, that maybe doing a little reading right now before the moment of crisis would be beneficial, though. And it sounds like, rather than Googling the wealth of information that must be out there, your website, Kathleen, sounds like it offers a really good portal for people to learn more in advance.
Yes. And that's the thing. The person that does want to be the superhero, that is the superhero that picked up that squirrel off of the road, say, that they are a super fairy and they're going to be asked to possibly continue to be one, because this year, the last 3 years, our organization has actually had to say, I'm sorry, we're full. We don't have enough volunteers. We cannot take the animals, but we will talk you through how to care for that animal while you have it there. So it's not a we own them, we possess them, you can't touch them situation. And this is just an open conversation to try and determine the absolute best result for that wild animal. And the webpage does have that information, yes.
Yeah, and Janie, you've talked a bit about your education efforts, and Kathleen, I'm curious to know if you have some, and then maybe some resources that folks might use online in addition to the one you've already mentioned, where folks can learn about, observing or knowing when they can help, and then also the bigger picture of how to prevent our wildlife from being in need of rehabilitation and rehab and rescue. Janie, you want to go ahead?
Well, we're going to be in Sandpoint on July 31st for an educational showing, two of them, one at 11 and one at 1 p.m., showing our live bird prey, teaching people the importance of their wildlife situations and how to avoid certain things. For instance, if you do find an injured raptor, you don't want to try and feed it yourself, because birds of prey will, of course, imprint on humans, and it's an irreversible condition. These things are taught even our live bird of prey showings. And as I said, we'll be at the Sandpoint Library on July 31st for two showings, 11 and 1.
That's great. I'm putting that in my calendar. I think that sounds like a great opportunity to learn more about raptors and raptor rehab and rescue. Yay.
It does. And so, Kathleen, you touched on the fact that your events are down this year. So maybe in answering the question, tell us a little bit about what you might normally be able to do for educational programs and what is possible right now, given the restrictions of the work this season and the pandemic.
We normally we'd have between, you know, close to 36 outreach events and activities we put on. But 2 years ago, we did receive a grant to put in an educational interactive nature walk. So we do have at the facility a nature path where the patrons can call in, schedule a meeting or a tour with us, and have that guide lead them around through the very distinctive habitat so that they can have that absolute interaction with nature and learn hands-on, you know, the right things to do, the right steps to do. What is this plant? What is that bird that I just heard? Touch and feel the assortment of pelts and skulls that we do have the permits to provide and use as educational tools. So we do have that as an educational opportunity for the community. We also have a series of children's books that they can find the links online. Two of the books that were just written are more for the adults. So if they want to learn more about what it means to be a wildlife rehabilitator and some of the, like you said, Phil, earlier, I always have fun stories. Well, this book called Divine Calling is full of fun little anecdotes and stories of the assorted wildlife patients that we've treated the past 20 years. There's also another one. It's more of a series of short stories, and it's more of a rough edge to that one. But again, it's more of the dark side of wildlife rehab. That one is called Imagine. So those all those book links are available on our web page, and so that's one level of education that we can offer the community without having the ability to provide face-to-face.
Yeah, you know, you said that one is more of the dark side, and I don't want to go to the dark side too far, but wildlife rehab can't be 100% successful. I know that, and you guys must really have to draw on your own personal resources to just kind of hang in there. How do you do it, you guys? How do you stay strong when there's, these can be very sad situations, I know.
Well, grief, there's 18 forms of grief. And those that care for wild animals experience 15 of them. So we, as a professional entity, we must have really strong emotional, physical, spiritual connections and be supported by those that are really close with us, because without that support, we can't do what we do and continue to stay sane, basically.
Preserving good mental health is so important. We could probably do a whole nother show on that. Janie, any comments or insights on, you know, the process that Julie was just asking about, how you go through the failures as well? I shouldn't even say failure, the success and the alternatives. It's, how do you handle that?
Well, we train our volunteers and staff here to realize that on a good day, about 50% of your patients don't make it back to the wild. They either die, have to be euthanized. A few lucky ones may become teaching tools. But we ask people here on days where things don't go well to be reminded of the living still here that need our care. And we have a motto here. We usher you back out one way or the other, whether it's through euthanasia by the laws that we have to abide by, or if a bird dies on our ship that we couldn't save. So those are the realities of being a wildlife rehabilitator. And most of us, by the way, are all volunteer. None of us are paid for our work. I'm sure Kathleen would echo those sentiments.
Yeah, that's everybody thinks that because we take care of the state's wild animals that we are paid by the state. And that is very far from the truth. There, we do not receive any funding. Go ahead.
As we wind down to a close, we'll want to hear final thoughts, but let's also swing back and close on a positive note and maybe share with our listeners your favorite success story. And if there's more than one, that's okay. But tell us about the success story you're most intrigued, passionate, proud of. And Janie, let's start with you.
Well, I'm reminded of a bald eagle recently that was poisoned by secondary poisoning. And this means that the animal was poisoned that the eagle ate, whether it was a euthanized animal improperly discarded. The bird comes to us in a coma, lifeless, near death. And within 3 days of absolute treatments around the clock, fluids, vitamin shots, tubing into the stomach, this bald eagle is now awake and alert and in a week going back to the wild. So these are acute, quick turnarounds. Now, if you have a bad break of a wing or a shoulder injury, it can take you many, many months to rehabilitate if you're an eagle or a hawk.